The Sports Cage on Demand is brought to you by the Canadian Brewhouse, with the best food and drink specials and the most TVs for your favorite sports. I want to scream and shout and let
it all out and scream and shout and let it out. Good afternoon, Saskatchewan. Welcome to the Sports Cage. We're coming at you live from sunny and hot Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Day 4 of Saskatchewan Rough Riders training camp is in the books. It's a very exciting day in the sports world. Luke Mulliner joins me here at Griffith Stadium in the broadcast booth. Big hockey game coming up tonight. I've got it listed in top 5 biggest games in Brandt Center history. Pats and Swift Current bringing the action tonight. We'll have the game at 8 o'clock with Phil the Thrill and the Dumbas. But we're here to talk football for the first hour and a half of the program. In 29 degrees heat here in Saskatoon, Luke, is you got a full sleeve jacket on here today? Are you chilly? What's wrong?
No, I was just wearing this today, and I haven't gotten a chance to get back to the hotel and change it out. But yeah, it was a hot one today.
It was, and the head coach and general manager Chris Jones cut the workout by an hour, maybe even an hour and a half. The two a day was scaled back to a one a day today. And when we talked to the players afterwards, and you had some on your Riders live stream, they appreciated the reprieve today.
Yeah, no doubt. Again, we talked about it yesterday, that this group looked tired. It looked like it was aching. But they came out today, and I'm not sure whether they knew or not if the practice was going to be shortened, but they came out and they got it in. For what they did on the field today, I think they could be proud of themselves. I think that they took a lot of positive film off the tape today, and that's what you need, because – obviously, the evaluation process is never ending in training camp or really during the season, but you needed to have some positive feedback heading into this big prep for Sunday.
Well, we've got plenty to go over on the program today. Normally, a Mako Hockey Wednesday, normally you'd have Rich Sutter in this time slot, but the 13-year NHL veteran will be live from the Celebration Zone with Scruffy later on. We are talking football today, taking your questions. We love that. Prairie Mobile text line, 551-CKRM, 551-2576. Or the Coors Light Twitter feed, write us at Rod Peterson. Right now, find one of 4 stainless steel silver bullet koozies and select 24 can cases of Coors Light. On the way today, we're going to hear from Riders Special Teams Coordinator Craig Dickinson. But Luke, let's get into the meat of the workout today. If you will, there were some noteworthy items today. Brandon Bridge did spend considerable time with the first group today. It was 1A, 1B sort of thing. But Chris Jones did admit to this after the workout that it is a white-hot battle between David Watford and Marquise Williams for the number 3 spot behind those top 2 guys. And he brought up B.J. Daniels, too. He said, this guy isn't going away. This is one of the funnest position groups to watch in training camp.
And we've been saying that that was going to be the case all off season, especially after spring camp. I'll tell you what, Coach Jones is not lying when he's saying the battle is white hot. And the reason I think they responded so well to practice today is because they spent a lot of time competing today. Right out of the gate, they did the cheetah period in the red zone, which is basically offense versus defense. And folks,
no candy.
That first team defense, nobody's scoring on them during camp right now, especially when they were competing in the red zone. But what I liked about it is I've said time and time again, Marquise Williams is a gamer. What'd he do first cheetah period? He's the only quarterback that had 2 touchdowns. Zach Caleros accounted for the other one with the B group, but it was Marquise Williams. I'm telling you, every time you put this kid into a competitive situation, he responds. And I thought that that continued for him for the most part all day. But that's not to say that Watford didn't do well in spots. That's not to say that B.J. Daniels did well. But I'm just saying that Marquise Williams, whenever he's told to compete and the lights come on, that man responds. And I'm really enjoying watching this whole quarterback battle.
Yeah, I don't know what the rotation's going to be. That's one of the things I'm looking most forward to learning. Maybe tomorrow at the latest Friday, who at the quarterback position plays how much Sunday at the Edmonton Eskimos. And I think I've been saying the game's at 5. It's actually at 3. So it's going to be on television nationally. Of course, we'll have the broadcast, and it's going to be a quick day. Riders flying into Edmonton Sunday morning, playing the game, flying home Sunday night. So it is quick, but the guys are very excited for that opportunity. And to be honest with you, with the veteran group that they have, Luke, I think they would be going out of their minds if they had to go through a 2-week training camp before they played. Everybody loves playing this early.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were saying that. You're competing right away. This is a group that wants to compete for a championship this year with a bunch of core guys. They didn't want to wait around and go through a two-week phase where they're just practicing against each other. And the nice part about that is that because this game comes up so quickly, it's forced the development of some of these younger guys quicker. And you're really starting, and this is what I said yesterday, now that you have more install going in, you're going to see guys separating gradually from the rest of the pack, because those are going to be the guys that understand the playbook, nothing's getting too far ahead of them, and they'll be the guys continually making plays. So that's something that we're starting to see now. So it's no surprise that Marquise Williams is coming out and throwing touchdowns. I'm impressed with number 84. His name always escaped. Jordan Williams Lambert. This guy continually makes plays, especially over the last 2 days. And again, this is one of the things. They're throwing plays at him, and he's still finding ways to make the plays, get open within the offense. So he understands the scheme. That's a big – coaches look for that. Right, and coaches also notice the guys who aren't getting it. So, again, another guy doing really well for himself, in my opinion, is Devin Bailey. That kid's out here making plays as well, and they're keeping him close to the line of scrimmage and the box. They're running him at slot. They're running him all over the field, and he continues to make plays. And especially for a guy who's playing a number of spots, it's not as if they're just isolating him out on the wide side of the field and running him in one position. He's played in multiple positions in this camp. And again, it's nice to see that he's still catching the rock and he's producing. And hopefully you go into Sunday now and you continue to see these guys doing that. Another guy that I thought – oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to go to the defensive side of the ball, talk a little bit about number 96, Kurt Maggett. He's a Maggett, and I hope I'm saying his name right.
Maggett.
Yeah. Maggett, is that it? Well, former NFLer, former Tennessee Volunteer, but he was running with the ones a little bit today. He's an aggressive guy. He's got a really good motor, and I know Coach Ed Filion likes that. But again, you don't get to run with the ones if you don't know what you're doing over this install. And the more they put in, for instance, they're starting to blitz a little bit more. You're seeing the blitz package implemented in camp. The more he's running with the one shows you that, hey, he's getting it, which is nice.
I want to say this. We're getting a report, or I've been reporting in my website columns and on the air, just sort of who we're seeing with whom. But Chris Jones, which we're not going to air as scrum today, you can see it at Ryderville.com. Pointed out, they're just mixing and matching. Today's a great example of that. Jovan Johnson's been moved inside. I will say this, one of the top performers of this camp has been 29, Orlandis Harris, to the point where I got to go dig up a little more information on this guy. He spent more time with the ones than Creston Butler.
No, not today he didn't.
No, but it's 4 days.
Over
the four
last
days.
Couple days he's been spending, because Creston Butler, I think, has had an issue with an injury. Creston Butler was out there for the most part today, but when Creston Butler did go down, that's who they put in at that one spot,
but
at that field halfback
and
position.
And what I was getting to is, don't read into the fact who's playing where, that they're ahead of anybody else.
No.
That was the point that I'm getting to.
And well, it's nice, though, because Orlandis Harris really played well today. I think he had a couple picks, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
But he's a guy clearly catching on. They like his skill side. He's a very fast guy, and I mean, he's a smart football player. If Coach Jones is trusting you to replace you as a DB when one of your better guys like Creston Butler goes down this early in camp, because there's other guys they like. I mean, you understand that they really like Nick Marshall as well, right? So you look at Orlandis Harris and Nick Marshall, and you see them being plugged into different spots. Hey, those are two guys that you should probably keep an eye on, especially on Sunday. Another guy who's doing well consistently is Chris Lyles.
And he is at the place of Casey Rogers. I was just asked about him earlier today. He's just been very, very consistent.
Well, one of the guys brought it up to me today and reminded me, hey, don't forget, this is a guy they wanted to start the season out there, but he got hurt.
Last year.
Yeah. So he's realistically, he's already fit for the part. He just needs to continue to do what he's doing.
We got questions coming in, and we'll get to those after our first break, but I do want to ask you this, Luke. Chad Owens, from the opening set of camp to this point, has been with the ones. He's looked fantastic, and it's got me thinking that last year, just hear me out on this, if he was healthy out of the gate, do you think he would have been in that top five from week one on last year, because he was hurt early on in training camp. It's clear they think an awful lot of him and what he's capable of.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And realistically, last year is in the rearview mirror for everybody, including the coaching staff. I just think they're very fortunate enough to have him out here now. Again, any time that you can experiment and put, like, literally Caleb Holly isn't in the one group. And I'm guaranteeing you, if Caleb Holly's on any other team, he's probably in the first group. So that just shows you how deep this talent is. But, again, if you look at Chad Owens, there's nothing ceremonial about him being in the one slot back position. It's not because he's Chad Owens, because he's accomplished. It's because he's out there working. He's not taking any reps off. He's running at a high rate of speed. Every single route, he's catching every ball that's coming to him. He's earning everything he gets. So I don't want people thinking that Chad Owens is out there because he's Chad Owens. Uh-uh. This is not a ceremonial thing. He's doing really well for himself. And again, Caleb Holly, he just keeps making plays regardless. Regardless of where you put him, Caleb Holly's making plays. It was the same thing today.
And yet, Chad Owens is still in that group ahead of him. He's the guy, so that's my point. They obviously think a lot of him, and if he was healthy last year right out of the gate, I expect he would have played there too.
And with Daron Carter spending all his time on the defensive side of the ball today, you saw Caleb Holly up with the one group more often. And it also gave more reps to guys like Antoine Grant. We haven't really talked about Antoine Grant over the last 2 days, but here today, he's out here catching passes and touchdowns.
We're going to take a timeout, plenty to get to. We're coming to you from Griffith Stadium, day four of Riders training camps in the book. We're brought to you by Mako Collision Center on 620 CKRM. Boston Pizza Afternoon Rush. The Vegas Golden Knights will find out their Stanley Cup opponent tonight. The Tampa Bay Lightning host the Washington Capitals in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, with a winner moving on to face the expansion Golden Knights. Meanwhile, in junior hockey, the host Regina Pats and rival Swift Current Broncos tangle at the Memorial Cup. Pats win, the Broncos get bounced. The Broncos win, there will be a tiebreaker tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on 620 CKRM. NFL owners have approved a new policy aimed at addressing the firestorm over protests during the American National Anthem. The policy allows players to stay in the locker room during the Star-Spangled Banner, but requires them to stand if they come out to the field. And Toronto's Aaron Sanchez gets the start as the Blue Jays go for a series win against the Angels tonight at Rogers Center. The Jays ended a four-game slide with a 5-3 win in last night's series opener. Tyler Skaggs goes to the mound for the Angels. That's the Boston Pizza Afternoon Rush. Try one of Boston Pizza's five new thin crust pizzas, like the Skinny Carnivore with smoked prosciutto and Genoa salami. Thin crust creations at Boston Pizza gather round.
We haven't talked about the fact that the CFL also changed some rules today.
Big time.
Yeah, namely, the coaches no longer have the ability
to challenge pass interference,
which is awesome. Thank God. So obviously, now what you're going to want to do is make sure that you are giving the referees in this league every single resource to be better, right? Putting some money into them maybe, right? Because it's giving them some more accountability, and it doesn't hold them hostage to every decision they make now. So I like it. I really do.
I want to talk about that after the next break. This is a shorter segment. I want to get into all these rule changes that were approved today by the CFL Board of Governors. But Greg from Rama, Saskatchewan, has written in Prairie Mobile text line, and he says, who has been the standout in the one-on-one drills thus far? Assuming he's referring to line play. Mm-hmm. Get some thoughts on that.
Well, when it comes to one-on-ones, I'm honestly going to say McKenna Henry, just because he's doing so many things that we're not used to seeing him do. McKenna, to this point, has just been a straight bull rush guy, hits you in the mouth and try to knock you backwards. But this year, he's really utilizing an athletic skill set that, to be quite honest, I don't think people understood that he had or knew that he had, and I'm going to be one of them, those guys. I thought he was a very one-dimensional player. This year, his athleticism is really showing, and I think if you ask Coach Ed Filion, they're really impressed. And it might get to the point here, depending on what happens in these exhibition games, to where a two Canadian interior linemen on the defensive side of the ball is actually a conversation that they're willing to have, right? And that they may want to have when you look at the overall roster and how you look at the ratio. So I think that if he continues, that's a really good thing. I also like number 91. Number 91 continues to make plays.
Chad Geeter,
from the one-on-one positions. It's so hard when you look at the offensive side of the ball, like receivers versus defensive backs. It's so hard to judge who's doing what, or really it's kind of unfair to tell you the truth, because there's so much field for a wide receiver to operate in during one-on-ones. They literally have the entire field. They're not restricted to a lane, if you will, that they're usually restricted to in the concept of an offensive play. So it's a bit to the advantage of the wide receivers in there. So you just hope that the defensive back does the best he could. I think that one of the things that we haven't seen, unfortunately, in the one-on-ones is a linebacker that consistently hold the running backs down during their routes.
Not happening.
I think that is something moving forward that the coaches or that Rider Nation, you might want to check out, because I think that, yeah, I didn't see anybody really covering up running backs today successfully or consistently. And I'm not sure if what they're seeing on film either when it comes to the team drills and things. So hopefully that improves. But again, there's a lot of time here left before,
oh, yeah,
A, the exhibition game, and B, in Campbell.
Brian in Hudson Bay writes in, he says, hey guys, do either of you think that it's possible with all of our receiver talent that Chris Jones could switch Daron Carter to a full-time defensive player if he's the best they have for that open corner position? I absolutely think that's a possibility. I don't think that he wants to go into games having Daron play both sides of the football. So today, as Luke pointed out, he was exclusively on defense. He was in a green jersey with no number, and I think he's been admirable. What will tip the scale on that is if Chris Jones thinks that gives him the best opportunity to win football games. I think there's a very good chance of that. And I love watching Daron in the one-on-ones, because he only wants to go against Rob Bagg, Caleb Hawley, like the vets. He didn't even want to go against the rookies. He's tapping guys on the shoulder saying, I'm up. He's done pretty well there.
Well, the most important thing for Daron Carter about him being exclusively a defensive back today is that it gives him the chance to participate in the individual drills, where you're working on actual fundamentals and proper techniques that DBs have. You're not just out there playing in a scheme with your back to the sideline, making sure nobody beats you onto the inside or outside or deep, right? So today he got a chance to actually go through the fundamental side of playing defensive back. Now, if he is out there week one starting at boundary corner, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, to be honest with you. I know that they have talent on that wide receiver roster, but he's one of the best wideouts in the league. He will not be one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Right?
No.
So he's got a long way to go. I think there are defensive backs that are better than him right now fundamentally, but athletically, he's just on another level, which is what gives him the chance today, for instance, when he's out there playing guys in the slot. He's just such an athletic guy that he can make up for the fundamental deficiencies that he has.
We've got to take a timeout. We'll talk about CFL rule changes, and we've got Riders special teams coordinator Craig Dickinson coming up. We're live from Saskatoon Rider Training Camp for Mako Collision Center on 620 CKRM. The Sports Cage continues, coming to you live from Saskatoon. Day 4, Saskatchewan Rough Riders Training Camp is in the books. 29 degrees and sunny here in the Bridge City. Beautiful night down in the Queen City as well. Pats and Swiftcurrent Broncos coming up at 8 on 620 CKRM and Sportsnet. I've labeled it top 5 biggest games ever in that arena. Tonight, if you haven't got your tickets yet, get them. And Scruffy, 1 hour from now, will be taking over from the Celebration Zone. And we understand, Scruffy's just texted me, that Phil Pritchard, the keeper of the cup, the Stanley Cup, will be on the air with him tomorrow. It'll officially, tomorrow at 5:30. It'll officially become a Mako Hockey Wednesday in 1 hour's time. Luke Mullender with me. And before we get back to what's gone on here in Saskatoon today with the Riders, CFL sent out a news release today It says rule changes designed to improve player health and safety and eliminate illegal contact as a challengeable play will be in place when the CFL kicks off its regular season next month. The league's Board of Governors has now approved the changes, which were first proposed by the CFL Rules Committee earlier this year. The new director of officiating for the CFL is Darren Hackwood. He said the governors have again emphasized the importance of player safety to our league, as well as the need to protect game flow on behalf of our fans. So a summary of the changes, I don't know if I can get to all of them, but here are a few. Illegal contact on a receiver can no longer be a play coaches can challenge and therefore send to video review. The replay official will automatically review potential touchdowns, which are plays marked down short of the line when it appears obvious a touchdown has been scored. It will be illegal for any player to deliver a forcible block on an opponent while moving back towards his own goal line, sometimes referred to as a blindside block. Low blocks that occur outside of the tackle box are now outlawed, and the definition of spearing is widened to include any situation where a player delivers a blow with his helmet as the initial or primary point of contact. So where do you want to go with those, Luke?
Well, the spearing's going to be – the spearing came with an addendum, did it not? And it said excluding low running backs. Right? Or ball carriers that are actually ducking. So I like that because a lot of the time I'm hoping what that means is if a player makes contact with his helmet on a quarterback or a receiver who is ducking or is folding up, that shouldn't be a spearing thing. If someone's trying to hit him using fundamentally technically sound tackling, and he's folding up and cringing, basically, to make his head vulnerable, then that shouldn't be spearing, right? Again, we touched on the fact that, yes, the pass interference is no longer challengeable.
Illegal contact.
Illegal contact, yeah.
Because there's a big difference, right?
The one I'm curious about is the rule where you can't cut block outside of the tackle box, because you've seen fullbacks. See, I really think that fullbacks might be targeted for this if the tackle box moves. So, for instance, the Riders, or every team really, has a play where they'll take their fullback and he'll come from one side to the other side and block the end guy on the line of scrimmage while the rest of the offensive line is blocking in the opposite direction. So does that tackle box automatically travel with the tackle, or does it remain where it started? Because if it remains because if a referee says, okay, well, you were blocking outside of the tackle box, meantime,
which is outside the tackle.
Yeah, which is right off the foot of the tackle, right? But it's only because the tackle and the rest of the O-line are going the other way. It's essentially opening up a gap. Well, hopefully referees are going to catch that, right? Or I do like it because now wide receivers aren't just going to be able to run upfield and cut a DB, right? So,
right, but
I like the changes.
But the big one is the illegal contact not reviewable. Now, this will cut out, Luke, probably one half of the reviews.
Yeah,
entirely right.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I like.
Hold that thought. And we're back. All right, you said, and the other? Good.
The other rule was regarding the force-out rule. So a wide receiver has to make contact on the field with his foot to rule it a catch. I like that. I don't think you're going to start to see DBs catching guys and carrying them out of bounds on purpose, right? But I like that rule as well because it holds the wide receiver accountable. And realistically, it's just tightening up that rule because you don't see that rule being called an awful lot anyways.
The official wording of it is the so-called force-out rule is eliminated. A receiver catching a ball has to place at least 1 foot in bounds regardless of whether he was contacted in midair or not.
Yeah.
So they've eliminated that. Back to our listener questions, by the way. They've got quite a few through 4 days of training camp. James in Regina writes in regarding Daron Carter. What side of the ball will he play? James says, I agree with Luke regarding Daron Carter playing cornerback. Nobody disputes he's a tremendously gifted athlete, but let's be realistic here. He's way more exciting watching him catch footballs from his quarterback instead of the other teams. Well, look, Chris Jones isn't in this to be excited, exciting, and I don't want to see him play corner either. My point was that he can. He can. I don't think they want him playing exclusively DB in a football game at all. I want to see him at wideout as well, and so does Luke. Well, my point is today he was entirely at corner and did pretty well.
And to be honest with you, I think that the chances of him playing cornerback would have increased greatly if there hadn't been a couple guys starting to separate themselves from the group in that defensive back category. But luckily you're seeing guys like Nick Marshall, like Orlandis Harris, like Chris Lyles. You're seeing guys who are capable of making plays. Granted, it's only in training camp right now. You've got to see them in this exhibition game and then the next one. But you're seeing guys that can make plays, and you're not sitting here. You know, you and I aren't sitting here like, man, what are they going to do at boundary corner? What are we going to do there, right? Because if that was the case, then we'd probably see Daron over there a lot more. I just don't think that you can take a talent like that off the offense strictly because – I mean, look, the stats speak for itself last year.
And
right?
Chris Jones and knows that. Chris Jones knows that.
Yeah.
He's a 1,000-yard receiver. He won 8 straight games with a touchdown. He was a huge reason why they won 10 football games. But they're taking a look at him there. They're taking a look at, like, Christian Jones has spent more time at wideout than he has as a returner. Chris Jones said today he's not going to play there all year.
No.
So, yeah, he's razzle-dazzled. The DBs have said he's the fastest receiver they have. But Chris Jones came out and said, just pump the brakes here, guys. He's not going to be a wideout this year.
No, absolutely not. You're not giving Christian Jones – you're not putting Christian Jones in over the wideouts that they have, right? But you got to prepare
these guys. And yet he's taking the reps there.
You have to prepare these guys. Well, more importantly, again, we always have to go back to the fact that we're dealing with 42-man rosters on playing day, right? So if you do get one or two injuries to a position group, see, that's the thing about the CFL. One injury in a position group, you can take. A second one happens, you're screwed, right? We've seen it time and time again where defensive linemen have to go over to the O-line because they've lost two guys. That's detrimental to teams, right? So you've got to get guys used to playing certain spots just in case they're needed in a jam during a game with only 42 men on the roster.
Chris from Regina writes in Prairie Mobile text line. He says, couple things. Any word on Josiah St. John's status? I believe this was a make-or-break season for him this year, and it's really discouraging to see him missing camp again. For those that don't know, that was the number one overall draft choice in the CFL 2 years ago by the Riders. And he goes on to say, I'm still quite worried with our Canadian depth, specifically on the offensive line. What are you guys seeing from our possible backups and depth at O-line?
Well, when we heard Chris Jones' interview about Jeremy Zwer and his abrupt retirement, I think you heard some anxiety in there, and I think there's a little bit of anxiousness going on, especially in that Canadian depth. I'll tell you one thing. I talked to Josiah St. John just in passing, and nobody's more discouraged than him. People have been talking about his offseason. You ask a couple of his teammates, they say that, hey, listen, something's changed about him, which is – and teammates aren't going to lie about that, right? They're not media guys. They don't need to create stories. So he looked and seemed like he was prepared. He's very discouraged, but he did say that he's close, which is a positive thing, especially when you understand that, hey, this exhibition game's happening Sunday, but there's another competition, right? So you can just – if he can make it back at some point, there's still competitive elements left in training camp that he can prove himself. As far as the Canadians go, Brendan Labatt, as advertised, stud. Darren Clark, stud.
Best cap he's ever had,
beast.
Possibly.
Absolutely. Balling out there and doing it whenever they – that's the thing about Dan. Anything you ask of him, he's going to go and do. Darius Bladek, that's an interesting case right there. Darius Bladek hasn't been world-beating, right? And I think a lot of people came to camp to watch Darius Bladek and expected him to just be an all-star form. I think we have to scale it back a little bit and just remember that Darius Bladick is still a young offensive lineman, only in his second year. Having said that, he's not doing bad, right? It's just I think there's an expectation of him to come in here and just be a guy that pushes for all these starting spots. Like, I think people would have thought that he had taken Dan Clark's spot by now, which was totally ridiculous. That was going to be a dogfight regardless. So Darius Bladick is having a decent camp. He's just got to be consistent and continue to make steps. When you come to this game on Sunday, there's a big opportunity for a lot of guys. Darius Bladick is one of them. So you can look forward to that.
We have to take a timeout. I want to get into Canadian receivers and how Mitchell Picton's fared. I want to get into Canadian D linemen and linebackers too. Mm-hmm. And Nelson Hakowich has written us on the Coors Light Twitter feed. He says, Rod, if you are building this Pats Broncos game tonight, top five all time at the Brand Center, what would be your other four? We'll get to that coming back after the break, too. It is monumentally huge tonight under the orange top, and we'll have the broadcast here on the Mighty One. We'll be back in a moment. We're brought to you by Mako Collision Center on Rider Radio 620 CKRM. Luke Mulliner and I just saying here in Saskatoon, a monumental day in sports, a monumental night in sports tonight. It's do or die for the Tampa Bay Lightning and Washington Capitals. The Bolts host the Caps in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Eastern Conference Finals, with the winner advancing to face the Vegas Golden Knights for a chance to hoist the Stanley Cup. It's do or die for the Swift Current Broncos tonight, and in a lot of ways for the Pats too. Memorial Cup round robin game in the Brand Center at 8 will have it. The Boston Celtics home to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Game 5 of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. The series is tied at 2 games each, with the home team winning every game so far.
No game is more exciting
than Game 5.
Game 5.
It's the swing game. It's the swing game.
It's the big mo.
That is the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker. Save up to 20% off MSRP on select vehicles and enter to win Metallica tickets during Mega Metal May at Regina Motor Products. Buster Riles texting us. Remember him?
Oh, my man.
Buster Riles. Now at Fan 960 Calgary writes in, our former producer, he says, the Pats will win, the Caps will win, driving in from Calgary for the Pats game and the rest of the week tonight. Nice to hear Ryder talk again. You wouldn't hear any CFL talk in Calgary, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He says, can't wait for the season. Have fun at the rest of camp. And for Nelson, who wrote us on the Molson Coors Twitter feed, here's my top five all-time Pats games, really in any particular order, but 2001 semifinal. Memorial Cup, Pats and Valdor, which the Pats lost in overtime. Last year's Game 6, WHL Finals, Regina home to the Seattle Thunderbirds, which unfortunately the Pats lost, facing elimination. 1984 WHL Finals in the Brand Center, and 1980 Memorial Cup. But just remember, I was 7, so I don't really remember the ramifications of it. But I can't think of any more bigger games than this one tonight for the Pats and the Broncos.
You got the Pats, obviously?
Yeah, Pats for sure.
You going Pats?
NHL guys been calling me all day.
I'm joining the regiment too, man. I'm on the Pats bandwagon right now. Let's go.
They are saying, all the NHL guys saying the Pats will win this one tonight, hope they're right. Kim in Saskatoon writes in, and by the way, one thing I've learned in the last week, this show is so big in Saskatoon. It's unbelievable. Can't believe we're not on a Saskatoon station.
We love talking ball in Saskatoon.
I'm astounded, and I don't know why, every year when we come to Saskatoon, how much they love this football team in this town. And the only reason I'm surprised is that it's 2 hours away.
I'm going to change
from
my vote.
Where the team plays.
Can I digress a little bit?
You're not cheering for Swift Current, are you?
I am now, because you just said, well, I'm not cheering for them, but you just said, like, everybody thinks the Pats are going to win.
Yeah.
I'm an underdog guy. I think that when Swift Current guys hear that, it's going to piss them off.
I think they got
so
enough
I'm going for
to
the Pats,
be ticked off.
But
hey,
I have a feeling that Swift Current's going to sneak this one out. Sorry.
As of 4:53 in the afternoon, 4:54 now, there's no wrong answer.
Yeah, true.
But
yeah,
we'll see tonight. Anyways, Kim in Saskatoon writes in, says, in regards to the rule changes, it's encouraging to see the CFL start to adopt more principles of safe contact. Our kids are being taught it at the minor football level, and good to see it in the pros.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Absolutely, especially now that registrations are dipping for football signups. You have to make the pro game safer, because that's what's on TV. That's what's in front of people, right? So you make that game safer. It encourages parents to say, okay, you can give it a shot. And then once the parents get into those practices and see guys like Ryan Hall doing tackling clinics for each team in the RMF, things like that, then they realize, okay, this is something that my son can invest in. And it's a lot cheaper than hockey. But then again, everything's cheaper than signing your kid up for hockey.
Yeah, no kidding. And we're still the hockey capital of
the
country.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like a $1 billion industry, and everybody knows it.
Said I wanted to talk about Canadians, and the texter earlier kind of got us on that topic. Devin Bailey, when Chris Jones signals you out in the media, you know you're doing great things. And he said today, Devin Bailey's done a great job. Jake Hardy was signed in free agency, Canadian receiver. He's done for the season with a torn ACL. Devin Bailey, through 4 days in, you'd almost say he's made the team. Mitch Pickton has to be better. And I think he's got a lot of time left to prove himself. Luke, the other Canadian receiver, Joshua Stanford, I can't see a scenario where they keep all of them. Do you?
No, it's tough as a Canadian receiver right now, especially with guys. Here's, when it comes to the Canadian receivers, it goes in this order. Rob Bagg, everybody else. But honestly, and it's just because Rob Bagg hasn't been out here catching a lot of footballs, but Rob Bagg has been doing everything else so well. And today, for instance, when they're throwing these wide receiver screens, who's the one that gets all the credit and all the celebration for getting that first down for the squad? Rob Bagg, because he's throwing out blocks. But if you're going to ask me who the best Canadian is under Rob Bagg and who's doing the most, it's Devin Bailey.
I think it's not close.
He's having an outstanding camp, especially over these last 2 days. And that's why it's so important. It's not just coming out here the last 2 days. It means you're learning everything that you need to know in the meeting room. Granted, he was here last year, but he's doing everything with the window of opportunity that he has. He's taking advantage of every one of his reps. When it comes to Pickton, I agree with you in that you need to see more. I'd like to change. You need to see some consistency, I think, is what Pickton needs to catch everything that's coming his way. There was a couple throws that he could have had today that would have tipped the scale and really probably had everybody saying, man, Pickton had a great day, but he didn't come up with the ball, right? And you know that rule is a wide receiver. If you touch it, you can catch it. So, again, I think Devin Bailey right now is really doing himself a favor by making as many plays as he has. And that's unfortunate because Josh Stanford has been quietly as consistent as ever. That guy goes out and gets his job
done. Had a great camp.
He doesn't get as many opportunities, but every single time he does, guess what? He's coming up with the football, and he's moving the sticks. So that's what I like. I think that if you were to order them, you'd go Devin Bailey, and then you'd drop down, and you'd go to Josh Stanford, and then you'd go Mitch Pickton.
That's where it is, folks. And I'm just going to tease it. We're going to come back next hour talking about the Canadian linebackers. Cameron Judge, Sam Hurl, Gagne, Chevrier, Grandin, where do they all fit in? I think we know who our safeties are going to be, Mike Edom and Marc-Olivier Brulette. I think he's had a good camp. There are those that agree. You think he could give more, at least early on.
Who?
Brulette.
Oh, no, Brulette's a vet. You could tell he's an older vet, right? He's not moving around at the same speed as Mike Edom. And that's not saying he's slow and he looks rickety, guys. It's just that's the facts. Mike Edom out here is moving around really well. He's looked fast. Yeah. Again, that's the thing about Mike, though. I think that you really look sitting there hoping that he gets to that next level because I think that's where everybody sees him, right?
This is his sixth year.
It would be different if it was just, Mike Edom's serviceable. But Mike Edom has a skill set that really makes you want to say, man, this kid's going to be awesome.
We'll continue this next hour. The track races are going on.
100 meters.
We'll hear
a blowout.
And nobody quit. And we're going to hear from Craig Dickinson as well. We're brought to you by Mako Collision Center on 620 CKRM.
Feel it coming in the air.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Saskatchewan. Welcome to the Sports Cage. Rod and Luke coming to you from Griffith Stadium here in Saskatoon. Day 4 of Saskatchewan Rough Riders training camp is in the books. And I had mentioned prior to the break that prior to the news, how many text messages and tweets we have from Saskatoon listeners. Jeff Blosky writing us on the Coors Light Twitter feed. He says, Saskatoon loves the Sports Cage. I've seen all kinds of evidence of that, Luke, over the last week. One thing we've learned, just before we get back to the football talk, the fallacy or the myth that white people are slow does not exist in Saskatoon track and
that
field.
That myth is being murdered right now.
Luke and I are making bets on these track races down in front of us, and we're getting killed.
Oh, man, if anybody was listening to my bets, you'd think I was racist. But out here?
He's not betting on the white racers. And he's losing.
They're balling. I'm losing. Man, they are balling.
I love the track and prep. Why is it that every year, every year this time, track and field's going on up here? I love
Thank God, though. Thank God.
Well, we're not alone. I don't like being alone up here.
I know. It's boring just looking at the
It's not
even
boring.
Even though sometimes the club just warms up while practice, which is weird.
Pat's Memorial Cup tonight against Swift Current at 8 in the Brand Center. I've zeroed in on it being, in my opinion, the second biggest game in Pat's history in the arena tonight with a chance to qualify for the semifinals. Maybe the myth is not wrong.
No.
As we watch the
Got blown away there. We just saw someone walk the last 30 meters in a blowout.
Yeah, she won.
Sorry,
she
white people.
Flo-Jo.
We love you.
Flo-Jo.
We love you, white people.
Copycat.
This wasn't happening right
now. Yeah. So before we get back, and I know we got a bunch of new listeners here in hour two, we have not spent any time on Johnny Manziel, and that's cool. I mean, I see people saying, I'm sick of the Manziel coverage. Well, not from us, because we haven't talked about him at all week, but on TSN and Sportsnet, there's been a ton. That's all I've watched in my room. You and I haven't talked about it. July 5th, the Tiger Cats are in Regina, and I have my doubts whether or not he's even going to be a Ticat by then, or if things go well, maybe he's starting by then. But there's an article on TSN.ca today that says Warren Moon and Chris Carter both expect Johnny Manziel to struggle. Warren Moon says a 50-50 chance of Manziel having success in the CFL, while Chris Carter, whose son Duran, of course, is a star with the Riders, says for three reasons Johnny Manziel will struggle in the CFL. One, he believes the CFL is much better than the SEC, the conference that Manziel starred in with Texas A&M. Two, there's more pressure on first down, given that the CFL only has three downs in comparison to the NFL's four. And number three, there will be 12 defenders coming at Manziel in the CFL, which is one more than he dealt with in the NFL or college. One thing about Johnny Manziel, I don't necessarily agree with what Chris is saying, CC. Johnny's smart. I mean, he's got problems, or has had problems, away from the field, but he's smart. I think he's going to be successful up here.
I want him to be successful. I think that we're giving him too short of a timeline. I think people want him to succeed right away, and I don't see that happening. I think that this is going to be a process, and you've got to learn the game, and you're not just going to – it's different. People look at the success of June Jones and said, well, he succeeded right away. Well, that's just – June Jones has been an offensive-minded coach for like 170 years. Johnny Manziel has yet to be a professional quarterback. NFL, CFL, I don't care what you call it. Spring
League.
He
started in the NFL. He just didn't have success in the NFL.
So you're coming to an entirely different game. I actually think that Chris Carter's assessment of the situation is dead accurate. I think that we still have yet to see whether Johnny Manziel can assimilate himself into a CFL offense and deal with the CFL game. You're not seeing every single guy on defense minus the safety line up on the line of scrimmage and show blitz in the NFL, right? You're not seeing certain things. So, yeah, I think Johnny Manziel's got a long way to go, and I want him to succeed. I think it's good for the league if he does, because he comes with a following right off the bat that opens so many more doors down south for the Canadian Football League. But I just don't see it happening right away. I don't think it's fair. And I'm hoping what happens, I'm hoping if he doesn't succeed right away, that that's not an indictment on him. I'm hoping that he's given the full 2 years to really have us look back and say, was he a success or
not? So that's a hybrid sort of my answer. I think he'll have success, but I think it's going to take time. I would think that's pretty obvious. I don't think he's going to be successful out of the gate either.
Yeah, we're rushing it. We're rushing it for him. And then you look at coaching staffs and general managers who have guys on their developmental program for a year and a half to 2 years right off the bat, like in their mind. Well, there's some GMs. I talked to Coach Jones, and he was in Florida when he was identifying some guys that were 2 or 3 years away. So this is a process. It's not something that you're just going to walk into and ball out. So I'm hoping that he's giving his due process, and I'm hoping that he doesn't succumb to the pressure of needing to be good right away in order for him to be considered a success.
July 5th, Manziel and the Ticats at Saskatchewan. Whether he starts or not, that is a million miles away. Hal in LaFleche writes in on the Prairie Mobile text line. He says, "Hey, Luke and Roddy, your insight on this training camp has been fantastic. You've both seen many camps. What has been the biggest change you've seen this year compared to last season? Talent, coaching, intensity of play? Anyways, enjoy the show, boys." I'm going to go a little different direction with that answer and just say, here's what I've noticed this year compared to all the camps that I've covered in the past, and this is my 20th. I can't believe the physical condition the players are in this training camp. When I first started doing this in 1999 to now, light years. The guys came to camp to get in shape. They're in immaculate shape right now. With the plays that they're making, the athleticism that they're showing is blowing my mind. And I think you'd agree, Luke, because when two guys show up that aren't in that shape, Nick James and John Ojo, not only do they stick out like sore thumbs, they're cut 2 days in.
We knew it right away with Nick James. I wouldn't want to tweet it about him because I didn't want to call him out.
But Jones said it.
You knew that he was gone just because of the shape he was in, right? So, yeah, they're in such bad – and that's just because of the change in culture around professional football. Athletes are dedicating so much more time to being a professional athlete, and they're also spending a lot more time in the off season with film. Because back in the day, you couldn't get the film unless you were in the building, unless they were sending you packages of videotapes. Now they just email you what you want, right? Hey, so-and-so. Hey, Hudson, can I get every single second and four that I was involved in a double tight end package from 2017? Yep, Huddy will send you a clip within an hour. So it's so much easier to be a professional athlete and train for it because it's expected. It's more of a culture now. In terms of the last 2 years with the Chris Jones regime, what makes this camp so different, and we touched on it in our first Sports Cage show on Monday, is that this team is just in a different position. It's positioned to compete for a championship. It has a core group, which changes the dynamic of what you're seeing on the field. First year especially, there was 1,000 reps a minute. Guys were just getting thrown in and out. Guys were playing all sorts of different positions. It was a very random process, but it was chaotic, but it was random at the same time because you didn't know who was fitting where. This year, you come in, you know where the spots are that are available. You know who you need to have a big year. You know who needs to step up. You understand that finally there's a franchise quarterback battle that's going to come to fruition, right? So it's just a very different dynamic because there's a different culture. The culture has always been compete here, but now it's being implemented by a veteran group. It's not just the coaches. The coaches are a little bit quieter now. They make sure the level's at where they need it to be early on in practice to make sure it happens for them, but the players can carry it now, and that's not something that you've seen in the first 2 years of this Chris Jones experience.
I want to sneak in an interview with Riders Special Teams Coordinator Craig Dickinson. I had occasion to chat with him after today's workout and asked him how camp's been through 4 days.
It's been great. The effort level's been fantastic, Rod. Getting a lot of good work in. We got more veterans this year than we've ever had, so the drills that we do and the way we practice, the guys know it already, and the veteran leadership's been outstanding.
Compare this camp to 3 years ago when you guys just got here, if you don't mind.
Oh, night and day. 3 years ago, it was a total rebuild. Everybody was new, and a lot of what we did early was just trying to teach them the system and teach them the way we practice and the tempo we practice at. So night and day. It's been a great camp so far.
So are we finally where you were waiting a long time to get to?
We're not there yet, and I think everything's a work in progress, but it's very safe to say that we're much further along now than we were 2 years ago, and we're much further along now than we were last year, in my opinion.
It's interesting, as we watch camp from our viewpoint, we don't really know what's going on. We see Christian Jones used a lot at wideout, yet Jones just said that he won't play there this year. Like, you know what I mean? You guys moving guys, it's hard to follow from our perspective.
Yeah, I mean, one of Coach Jones's philosophies is versatility. So we want to find out everything a guy can do. You know, and that's a nice, refreshing change from a lot of places where they talk about what a guy can't do. So we try to find out everything a guy can do, because in this league, injuries happen. They happen often. They usually happen at the worst of times. And so you have to have the ability and the flexibility to move a guy around. So that's why guys are playing a lot of different spots. And we feel like the better football player we can make them, the better they'll be at their position group.
Is this still a case of the offensive and defense will be picked, and then you got to sort out special teams after that?
Yes and no. I mean, I'll always have some input in terms of our Canadian content, and it's pretty good right now. A guy to make our team, he's got to be able to contribute positionally and then also have some special teams value. So it's a coordinated group effort. Coach Jones ultimately makes the final decision, but he won't keep a guy if he doesn't have special teams value. So we're asking these guys to do a lot of things, both on O&D and on special teams as well.
I ask you that because I look at guys like Sam Hurl and Jordan Reeves, who have become personal friends. Like, I'm rooting for them. Is there room enough to keep all these guys? Because I know they affect games with their special teams play.
Yeah, I can't answer whether there's room or not. I sure hope there is. But they're both good football players and good, hard-working young men. I've coached them both over the years, and it's been nice to see them grow. They're bringing their best effort each and every day, and they're leading by example. So I hope when it all plays out, we'll have room for them.
Can I ask you, is this a picking up where you left off scenario from last year's East Final loss in Toronto, or are you installing new stuff and new tricks and new things?
It's not a picking up where we left off. It's you actually evolve throughout the season to put in more and more stuff as the year goes on. So we're going back to basics, because what we felt like we did a good job of last year on special teams was emphasizing the little things and really working on the basics and getting as good as we could at those, and then saving the tricks and the gadgets for maybe a little bit later. So we got some stuff in like we always will, but the main focus on Camp Rod has been go back to basics. Let's get good at the fundamentals and the little things that we like to teach, and then go from there.
Lastly, how do you feel about playing in Edmonton just a week into training camp? That's the first for me. I got to think it is for you, too.
Yeah, it's fast, but I like it. A lot of times the battles in training camp start to sort themselves out after 3 or 4 days, and then you got to wait another 7 or 8 days to play the game. And by playing the game right away, guys can separate themselves right from the get-go, because the game still has a big determination, obviously, on who you're going to keep and who you're not. In the game, guys tend to rise to the top, and other guys tend to fall down a little bit. So I think the early game's going to be great for us.
Craig Dickinson, thanks. Great to have you back for another year. You look great in green.
Thank you. It's good to be back. Appreciate it.
Boston Pizza Afternoon Rush, smoking night in sports. We got Game 7 between the Washington Capitals and Tampa Bay Lightning tonight in Tampa. Winner goes on to face the Vegas Golden Knights for the Stanley Cup. 8 o'clock at the Brand Center, Regina Pats taking on the Swift Current Broncos. Pats win, they're off to the semifinals. The Broncos are done. Broncos win, and they'll go into the tiebreaker. Boston Celtics welcome the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight for Game 5 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals. The Celtics won the first two at home, while the Cavs tied it up with two straight wins in Cleveland. Tonight's game is in Beantown. And the Blue Jays are hoping to ride their momentum from last night into another victory tonight against the LA Angels. Righty Aaron Sanchez gets the start for Toronto as the Jays continue a three-game home series against the Angels. This is the kind of night that we live for in sports. This is why we love sports. I've made an executive decision. We're going to go to Boston Pizza, Luke, to watch these games. Are you down?
BPs?
Yeah.
Sure.
Boston Pizza. Try one of their 5 new thin crust pizzas, like the Skinny Carnivore with smoked prosciutto and Genoa salami. Thin crust creations of Boston Pizza gather around.
Oh, yeah. It's starting to even itself out now that the finals heats are rolling. We're back to being racist, folks.
The old boxing adage, never bet on a white guy. May apply to track and field, too.
After all. We thought it wouldn't, but yeah. Turns out now that the finals heats are going, it probably does.
Take the long view, not the short view. So you just heard from Craig Dickinson. A lot of tidbits coming out of that interview. He's another guy that's excited to be playing on Sunday this preseason game. But as I said to you in the break after that interview, 3 years ago when Jones got here with this whole band, the Gypsies, They couldn't have played a week into training. They wouldn't have been ready a week into training camp to play a game.
It would have been chaotic. They would have only ran about one offensive play and one defensive play. It would have been bad. But, again, we talk about it. This is an entirely different group of players that has a core. And I hate being repetitive about it, but, I mean, it's facts. And that's what happens in locker rooms when you compete for championships. You have to have core groups, and these guys do.
Edmonton does too. You know, the other day I said we're going to talk about the Eskimos and we never got around to it. This could be a real slobber knocker on Sunday. Not just your regular run-of-the-mill preseason game A.
I'm going to hit you with predictions right before camp ends. But I'm telling you what, Edmonton, they're going to have a squad. They're going to have a squad. I think that it's all on Mike Benavides and his scheme, man. He can't hang his guys out to dry by just saying that, hey, you got to win on one-on-ones. I think he's got to get a lot more aggressive, got to update his defensive scheme to maybe something that's more fitting of 2018. But they've got a chance to be really, really good.
Back to the Canadian content.
They got the best player in the CFL.
Mike Riley.
And he's touching the ball every single time. How could you not think they're going to be
good? They got a lot of other good players, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why, we can't wait to get to Edmonton for the game Sunday at 3. Honestly, it's perfect timing. I expect to be a lot of Rider Nation at that game. Going to be a beautiful day in Edmonton. Middle of the afternoon game. Come on, Tractor Factor. Come out and watch Canada's team. But the Canadians, I mentioned the linebackers. Let's talk about the D-line, if you don't mind. Eddie Steele, Zach Evans look pretty at home in the interior of the defensive line. Mac Henry, you've liked all camp. Jordan Reeves has been taking some reps there. Your thoughts on the defensive line? I mean, you played there. How do you like this group this year?
Well, I really like the first group of defensive linemen. Obviously, Willie Jefferson, Charleston Hughes. Charleston Hughes, he surprised me a little bit. I didn't know necessarily what to expect out of Charleston Hughes when he got here, whether it was a vet just sort of on his last legs that was looking to impart some knowledge on guys and make a few plays. But he's come in and looked really, really good. And I think he's looked like you would sort of expect a perennial all-star to look. So that's actually been a refreshing thing for me. Obviously, Willie Jefferson, man, that kid's a stud. He's going to ball out this year. Again, he's going to be up there in pressures. But I think the acquiring Zach Evans is going to give Willie Jefferson some help in the middle, especially the way McKenna Henry's playing as well. I think that there's not going to be as many quarterbacks being able to step up in the pocket with Zach Evans there collapsing it. So you might see more production from Willie Jefferson in the stat sheet because, I mean, even him himself, everybody was always congratulating him last year on the fact that he was killing the rest of the league in pressures. And what was his first thing? He was like, all that means is they're misses or they're not sacks. So I think his numbers are going to go up this year based on what they've got. And then they've got some more guys in the back here fighting for depth. Tracer Boamafuta is also a guy that's been doing well. He's got such a thick trunk. Man, this kid looks like you can't move him with three guys. So, again, it's all about Sunday, man. I really expect some of these guys to start separating from the pack. I'm interested to see how McKenna Henry looks. I'm really interested to see how Kurt McGitt continues to go on. We haven't heard much or seen much from Justin Horton, Michael McFarland as well. But Chad Jeter, I think that he might make some noise on Sunday. He might be one to watch out for.
All right, my man. Let's do it all over tomorrow.
Yeah, let's roll.
Coming up next, after the break, Scruffy live from the Memorial Cup, Phil Pritchard, the keeper of the cup, will join Mitchell as they get ready for the Pats and the Broncos. The pregame show on radio is right around the corner. This becomes a Mako Hockey Wednesday right after this timeout. Live from Saskatoon, this is the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
From Rider Training Camp to the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Good afternoon, Saskatchewan, and welcome to the Sports Cage, the second half of today's show, originating from the Credit Union Eventplex, the Brandt Celebration Zone, where tonight the Regina Pats will take on the Swift Current Broncos in Memorial Cup action. The Pats win this game tonight, and they will go on to the semifinal. They will eliminate the Broncos. If the Broncos win tonight, we'll have a tiebreaker game tomorrow night. Mitchell Blair with you. Sharkey is with me. Rich Sutter is with me. And so is the keeper of the Stanley Cup, Phil Pritchard. He has been here all day with the Stanley Cup. And, Phil, welcome to the Sports Cage. Nice to have you. And how's the day been as you see kids and adults take a look at that iconic trophy?
Well, I think earlier today it was like a giant sports cage. It was, I think there was 8 schools came through this morning and early afternoon. The excitement on the kids' faces were spectacular, but the teachers, I think, were even more excited. But I think that's what the Stanley Cup is. It's always about memories and heroes and things like that, and so special. And then tonight, obviously, we got a big hockey game, so it's going to be a packed house with fans coming through before 8 o'clock, before the puck drop. So we look forward to meeting them. And
as Rod has mentioned, it seems as if this might be, well, who's kidding who? It is one of the biggest games that we've seen at the Brandt Center when the Pats meet the Broncos tonight. Sharkey, I can't wait for the puck to drop tonight. This is just the atmosphere in the building tonight, and from what I understand, they are very close, if not sold out already. As of this afternoon, there was less than 100 tickets to go, so it should be an atmosphere unlike any other in there tonight.
When I looked at the schedule when it first came out, this was a game I had circled as the one that I had to be at, that I wanted to attend to. Everybody's talked about getting back on the Broncos. I don't think that's the case at all. It's a chance, though, for the Pats to ensure themselves getting into the semifinal, not having to go through that tiebreaker and play the extra game. As far as I'm concerned, the Pats have the advantage here. They've looked fresher, obviously, because of not having played as many games. But Swift Current really hasn't looked great in the 2 games they've had so far.
Rich Sutter, we'll talk about what happened last night with the Hamilton-Acadie-Bathurst game once we've said farewell to Phil. And I know a lot of people have been talking about the way that game ended last night. But, Phil, with the Stanley Cup, the stories that you must have, and I'm sure you're going to write a book when your days are done with the cup. And
once, I can't even write.
Well, I was going to say, you're going to have to probably have to get a lot of legal advice. So can we say this about you? Can we say that about you with what happened? But how much fun do you have going not only around Canada with the Stanley Cup, but across the world? Because that, I don't know if there's a better job than the one you have.
Before you even start that one, I just want to know, are you still married?
I am.
Because I don't know, you must have your wife must be an angel to put up with the amount of time that you are probably gone.
She is. She might phone in right now. Who knows?
That's awesome, because you must have a terrific partner in that.
Exactly. You know what? As we all know in the sports world, especially the hockey world, it's a great world, and everybody knows everybody. And my wife is, she's very appreciative when I'm home, which isn't a lot, unfortunately. So we kind of have 3 lives, her life, my life, and our lives.
And do you have the honey-do list every time you
go? Oh, we all have that, I think.
I can't imagine how long the amount of time I'm home during the season is that, you know, my wife, she's up and gone by 7:15 or 6:15 every morning. But I'm embarrassed if I'm not up with her, because, you know, this is, I want to find the honey-do list that's somewhere on the kitchen counter waiting for me. You know, just for the days.
But, it's not anymore. It's now on our cell phone.
You get a text.
Yeah, she writes it right up, so I can't miss it, because if I get that bowl of cereal in the morning, it's sitting right there. Because you can't say you didn't look at your phone. It was sitting right
just
there.
Taped to the coffee pot. You can't miss it. Yeah.
But you know what? Back to what you were saying. I mean, we're so fortunate in Canada. Hockey in Canada has grown up together. It's now played in over 80 countries in the world. Everybody wants to eventually come to the National Hockey League and ultimately win the Stanley Cup. I'm probably like every other person that picked up a stick and put on skates. I wanted to win the Stanley Cup too. That unfortunately didn't work out, but to hang out with it is, I don't know if it's second best or third best or what is it, but to share your days with guys that have won the cup and see them with their family and friends, it's pretty special.
You've been doing this for how long now?
I'm going in year 30. 1988
wow.
I started.
Wow. And it's...
I was 4 when I started.
Yeah, exactly. And I know in talking to you before...
Lucky guy.
Like, you're not tiring of this one bit, are you?
You know what? I mean, we're sitting here chatting. That's what hockey's about, is reminiscing and sharing stories and telling stories and that. And it's a lot of fun meeting people. Like the kids today, little kids, they all had stories about Sidney Crosby or what's Alex Ovechkin going to do tonight and that. And then the teachers had stories about how Bobby Orr was... who they loved when they were little girls and stuff. And those stories are great, and that's what hockey is. It's about stories.
I got to tell you, and I'm going to embarrass him, but that's okay, because he's one of my coworkers, Ryan McNally from our news department. When we found out the Stanley Cup was coming today,
I said, I think you better come down to this. You better come down and see the Stanley Cup. And then when you were here, I said, go talk to Phil Pritchard. And he went, who? And I went, the handler of the Stanley Cup. And Drew Postey was with us. And we're like, dude, don't you know who that is? And he sort of looked at us. And then he realized who you were. He was like a kid in a candy store here today.
Because you're as famous as a cup.
Yeah, he got to see the Stanley Cup. He got to interview Phil Pritchard. He, honest to God, he was like a kid in a candy store. And it was as much fun watching him talk with you today as it was just seeing the Stanley Cup. And I know Derek Myers asked yesterday, when's the first time you saw the cup? It doesn't matter when the first time I saw the cup was, because every time you see it, and it doesn't matter what team you cheer for, you just get chills when you see that, knowing the history behind that trophy.
It's true. I think if the cup could talk, it would be a bestseller for life, because the stories.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we were sharing some earlier. The stories that could be out there of not only the passion and the emotion in that, but all the thank yous and all the giving back that players do and for their communities and the parties and everything.
And I know you'll be back here at least one time this summer, because no matter who gets in with Vegas, Braden McNabb from Davidson, so he could have the cup in Davidson. I'm trying to think of any other Vegas connections with Saskatchewan right off the top of my head.
Let's not forget Chandler Stevenson.
Chandler Stevenson with Washington, yes.
That's if they win.
The former Pat, Ross Mahoney, of course. With the Capitals, yeah. Chris Kunitz, who you've been here many times before have it back with Tampa. So the Stanley Cup will be back in Saskatchewan this summer again.
It's always funny. Someone usually asks me as we get closer to, say, the conference finals, who's going to win. And I always tell them the team that has a Quebec guy and the team that has a Saskatchewan guy is going to win.
Because that's where you end up every time.
Well, we're always seem to be here. And it is a unique community and a province here, obviously, and hockey's very passionate to it. But it's great when you go overseas to, like, Slovenia or Sweden. They're passionate about the game as well, and they bring a whole new passion to it.
And those are road trips. When you're going to Europe,
that's a huge road trip. That's what bags under the eyes are.
The Slovenia trip, obviously with Anze Kopitar, that must have been a very unique opportunity, unique trip for you guys.
Unbelievable. First of all, he's a great hockey player, but he's a better human being. And Slovenians are very cultural people. They're very proud of their country. They've gone through a lot. But when we landed there and the cup came off the plane, we were on the runway, we had all these photos, they had bands and that, and Anze's parents were there, and it was a lot of fun. And there's a lot of history in that country, obviously beyond hockey, but it's so special.
So I got to cut you off because we got a break here.
Why do you get to run the show?
Well, because that's sort of the way it runs.
Phil's
now.
Here.
I know he is. I know he is.
And
you
we
know
got Pete Lombardi coming in.
I've got advertisers who have to go. And, yeah, Peter Lombardi is on deck. We're going to talk to him beforehand. But, Phil, thanks a lot for the time. And thank you for bringing the Stanley Cup to the Memorial Cup. And safe travels. And we'll probably see you sometime this summer.
I'm hoping to see you sometime tonight at the game, because I look forward to a good
we'll be there. All right, Phil Pritchard, the handler the Stanley Cup, and we'll have much more for you when we come back. The Pats and the Broncos tonight at 8 to close out the round robin as the two Western Hockey League teams go at it to wrap things up. And will they play again tomorrow night? Well, we'll find out soon. You are listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. It is time for the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker, and the host Regina Pats take on the provincial rival Swift Current Broncos in Memorial Cup action tonight. A Pats win will eliminate the winless Broncos from playoff contention and push the idle Acadie Bathurst Teton directly into the Cup final. The Broncos win would send Hamilton into the final and set up a tiebreaker between the Pats and Broncos tomorrow. The Stanley Cup matchup will be set after tonight's game in Florida between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Washington Capitals. The winner will take the Eastern Conference final in 7 games and advance to take on the Vegas Golden Knights in the league championship. Regardless of what happens tonight, the Stanley Cup final will begin on Monday. The RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker for Regina Motor Products. Save up to 20% off MSRP on select vehicles and enter to win Metallica tickets during Mega Metal May at Regina Motor Products. Mitchell Blair, Rich Sutter, and Sharky with you on this Wednesday night. And, of course, the Pats and the Broncos at 8 o'clock. Les Lazaruk and the gang will be in to get you set up for it at 7. And we are joined by our good friend, who usually joins us on a Thursday, but he's just ripping to go. So we said, hey, we'll bring you on a Wednesday, and that is Peter Labardius from the Western Hockey League on Access. And you guys have been doing a great job with your pre- and post-game shows. I caught it last night for the first time back-to-back because I went home last night and watched the Sportsnet presentation, and you guys did a great job after the game breaking everything down. And, Peter, when I looked at that game last night, the first thing I thought of was I watched the Hamilton Bulldogs go as they progress to that win. This team is getting better and better and better as the tournament goes along.
As we talked about off the air, I had an opportunity to be out east and watch game three of their series against Sault Ste. Marie in person, and I always feel like, and nothing against television, it's paid me some money over the years to make a living. But there's nothing like being there in person, and Hamilton was full marks in that game for beating the number one rated team in the country. I like their skill level. I like their speed. They're very well coached, very organized. In Robert Thomas, to me, and he's shown it as far as I'm concerned, I think he's the most NHL-ready player that's here. I'm not sure what Mr. Sutter thinks, but my guess is he's probably pretty close to being on the same page. They're really, really good.
Does it favor? How much does it favor the Teton or the Bulldogs with what happens tonight? Because I don't think there's a lot separating these four teams. And just because you get a bye to the final, we've seen that happen many times before, doesn't guarantee you anything. But how big is it tonight for both of these teams that really don't have any control over the matter because it depends on who wins between the Pats and Broncos?
The numbers still indicate that advancing to the title game is a pretty strong advantage. I think I ran the numbers today, and it's 12 of the last 15. My only minor concern would be that they made a format change back in 2006, where at one point, same thing was the case the last time the tournament was here, where the off day was the Friday, and then you played the semifinal Saturday and the final on Sunday. So if you're in a scenario like those two teams are now, I wonder sometimes going from Tuesday to Sunday. I remember the Kelowna Rockets back in 2009 in Rimouski. However, like I said, you run the numbers even after the format change in 2006. Listen, if you don't have to play an elimination game, I'll take that spot any day of the week.
And you got to find time for these guys. Like, you know, you got your days off. Like, rest is important. You're banged up, that's important. Biggest thing is keeping these kids amused and occupied for 3 or 4 days as well, too, because believe it or not, there are probably still some distractions, and it's a big chore for the group alone to keep this in mind and how they stay together and stay focused. But like you said, the record speaks for itself, Peter, and I wouldn't want to bet against it.
No, and Peter, you're very right. The rest is the biggest thing, I think. And whenever you have that, you know, you think if you had to play the tiebreaker and play the tiebreaker and the semifinal with one day off, and for the Pats it would be three and four and five nights if they went all the way through or for Swift Current. That's, you're going to be at a disadvantage if somebody's sitting around waiting for you. You are right, though. There are distractions, and there are guys that will wander away from the ship, so to speak. And you might, but at this point at the season, at this level, at this game, you think it might be a little easier to come up with something for them to do, whether it's bowling or even just a long walk to get them out of trouble.
Peter, when you look at tonight, the Broncos, to me, looked tired the other night against Hamilton. Stuart Skinner just about stole one for them. And, hey, you know, the Broncos are 0-2, but they've lost a game in overtime. They've lost a game in the final 2 minutes. A lot of people are saying that the Pats tonight, if they dictate the pace, will win this game. I'm not so sure that's the case, and that's not a slight against the Regina Pats. Maybe that's just a compliment towards the Swift Current Broncos, because Manny Viveros' team, while they're on life support, they're not done yet.
Well, their road to this tournament is the most difficult of any Western Hockey League team of all time. They played more games, 26, than any other Western Hockey League team has ever played in its history. Two game sevens, including the one everybody here is very familiar with in round number one. I personally don't think we have seen the best of the Swift Current Broncos. They are without an enormous piece in Tyler Steenbergen, who, by the way, in that first round series led the Broncos with 12 points. At this time of year, when you're missing key people and it's game 101, me, it boils down to a couple of things. Pats are fresh. They're strong. They'll be better than they were against Acadie Bathurst.
Yeah.
You even go back to Game 7. They had a huge shot advantage. But who was there? Stu Skinner. To me, a lot of tonight, from a Regina standpoint, is about do we see Max Paddock game one or Max Paddock in game two? And yet I don't want to hang it all on the 17-year-old youngster, because the Pats, by and large, as their head coach said, were basically beat in every position in every matchup, including in goal.
How big is the first goal tonight?
I think it's probably larger for Swift Current than it is for Regina. I think Swift Current is in some real need to build.
Feel good about themselves.
That's right, you know, I was just going
find
there,
something that can get us going, to get us feeling good
couldn't
about
agree
our group.
With you more.
And they play such a defensive style when they have the lead. They can crash their own net and create a fortress around Skinner and give them those opportunities if they get that first goal. But without Steenbergen in there, if they got to create offensive chances, it's going to be a little more difficult for them than it would have been with him in the lineup.
Mitchell Blair, Rich Sutter, Sharkey, and Peter Labardi is with us. Are you going to hang on with us
yeah,
over
I'm
the break?
Stay.
I know you got a meeting tonight that you got to
okay.
get to.
I
so
can, listen, they'll get by without me.
All right, because I do want to talk, gentlemen, about last night's game and the way it ended. And if you heard the Memorial Cup report just moments ago, Mario Pouliot was a little spicy last night after the game. He was not... He was being second-guessed, and he wasn't liking it very much last night. And he was in a tough spot, and I think a lot of people in the rink last night didn't realize what was going on and why the Quebec champs wouldn't pull their goaltender down one with a man advantage to tie the hockey game and maybe win the hockey game and then go to the final. But Pouliot was very defensive last night in the post-game media session. He didn't like being criticized the way he was. I didn't have a problem with what happened last night. I thought he did the right move, but we'll talk about that when we come back. So we're here until 7 o'clock tonight, and then it'll be Les Lazarek and the gang taking over as we get you set up for the Pats and the Broncos here at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. We're in the Brandt Entertainment Zone, which will be opening up here right away, so the music will be blaring in mere moments here at the Credit Union iPlex. We will take a break. News is next. You are listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Good evening, Saskatchewan, wherever you may be listening, however you may be listening. Thank you for tuning in to the Sports Cage. It's a Mako Hockey Wednesday. Mitchell Blair with you from the Brandt Celebration Zone inside the Credit Union Eventplex. Not the iPlex, Sharky. I had Swift Current on my mind.
It's understandable.
Yes, and of course, I'm guessing as I speak, there are many coming down Highway 1 from Swift Current to the Brandt Center for tonight's game,
Garrett,
the Broncos and the Regina Pats. From what I understand, this thing may be sold out tonight, which is good. I won't get into the ticket thing because there are a couple different ways you could look at it, but we're here to concentrate on hockey. And guys, last night we talked about it. Ekeny Bathurst down 3-2 late in the hockey game. They have a chance, if they win, to go right to Sunday's final. They'd be undefeated at 3-0. There's a penalty on Hamilton with a 1:44 to go. And a lot of people in the rink were going, well, here comes the chance for the Teton. And Mario Pouliot would not pull his goaltender and was content with not winning the hockey game. And it was because Mario Pouliot knew by the formula that his team, if the Regina Pats win tonight, go to the final. Now, that decision was debated last night, and I know you guys talked about it on the Access post-game show. I know it was talked about on Sportsnet last night. I had no problem with what Mario Pouliot was doing because he was basically, he has a couple of chances to get to the final, and he's cashing them in. And Sharky, I'll start with you. I didn't have a problem with what Pouliot did. Yes, it's strange, it's unorthodox, but that's what happens at an event like this.
He was guaranteed already a spot in the semifinal minimum, right? If Hamilton got another goal, he would essentially be giving up some of his leverage to get to the final and miss the semifinal. The best he could hope for was a one-goal loss at that point and make sure he got his chance to go to the final, guaranteed semifinal. He's in the right position, and he made a good call at the time, and he obviously premeditated because, like we talked earlier, his team all knew they weren't pulling their goalie.
He knew what lottery ticket he had in each hand, you know, and he knew which one to punch at the right time. They knew the scenarios, but the bottom line is he made the right decision. I know where I was at in the stands last night, there was a lot of people going, well, what's he doing? Well, you know, he knew exactly what he was doing, and good for him. He did the right thing. made the right call.
And, Peter, when you look back at this tournament, every game has been a one-goal game with the exception of the game between the Pats and the Teton when I think it was Noah Dobson scored with, like, less than a second to go. And that goal by Noah Dobson could very well cost the Regina Pats first place in the round robin.
It did. It has.
Especially with the win tonight.
Yeah, and people have said, because I know I had a couple people ask me today, if the Pats were to win by four or five tonight,
doesn't
does
matter.
That change it? It doesn't matter because Swift Current is not in the equation when it comes to those three teams.
Yeah, in this tournament, just I'm not going to get into the math because people drive off the road. The games in the tiebreaker are only involved in the games amongst themselves. So tonight, with three teams potentially at 2-1, if Regina wins, they only count the goal differential quotient in the games involving what would have been Bathurst, Hamilton, and Regina. The games that each team played against Swift Current are thrown out of the mix.
Rich, John Paddock said today that Max Paddock will start. It wasn't a great night for Max Paddock against Acadie Bathurst. He played well against Hamilton. I don't really think that John Paddock could go with Ryan Kubik tonight because Kubik didn't play well against the Quebec champs. I think you got to go back with Max Paddock and hope that Max Paddock gives you the type of game he gave you down the stretch and against Hamilton.
It's what you expect. I mean, that's why he is going to be the guy tonight. You know, and we look back at that game the other night. It's 1-0, you know, and Bradley misses a wonderful scoring chance, you know, and all of a sudden you're really feeling a good about yourself. You could be up too, but bang, 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 three goals in less than a minute and a half. You know, he was left out to dry a little bit by his teammates on those goals as well. So, you know, it's not on him. It's on them as a group, which John alluded to after the game. But the bottom line is they all need to be better start to finish tonight. They know how they got to push the envelope tonight. Do it wisely. But the biggest thing is they do need goaltending. I don't care what level. You don't get goaltending, you're not winning.
Sharky, on the other side, Stuart Skinner has been the story of this tournament for the Swift Current Broncos. The Regina Pats knew how to get to Stuart Skinner in the first round of the playoffs. He was yanked twice. I'm guessing you look at film of those games. How did they get that? John talked today about, you know, having to find that open ice. Obviously, getting to Stuart Skinner is the key, but that's easier said than done.
Well, Stuart Skinner can't see the puck all the time. If you leave Stuart Skinner with the opportunity to have a good look at the puck, any goaltender is going to be successful. They have to take away his sight lines, and they have to make a move. When they were successful in the first round, they got Stuart Skinner to move left to right or right to left. If they shoot at him and hope there's going to be a big juicy rebound to pop, it's not going to work for him. They got to get him to move, and they got to take away sight lines.
Peter, I think a lot of people do believe the Regina Pats will win tonight. I understand that, as I said. I'm not selling Swift Current yet because Manny Viveros will have this team ready to go. But if the Pats do win tonight, can they beat the Hamilton Bulldogs and the Acadie Bathurst Teton to win the Memorial Cup and make this 100th anniversary season the special season they wanted it to?
It's not going to be an easy chore, for sure. I think those are two terrific hockey teams. I think goaltending is going to be an enormous factor for the Pats. If the Pats get the type of goaltending they had Friday night against Hamilton, and they're at the top of their game, I think they have a chance. The other thing, Mitchell, for me is they need more out of lines two
three. I was just going to bring that up.
In terms of their ability to contribute. When I look at tonight's game, there is no doubt in my mind. I've just seen too much of Swift Current in these playoffs. We're going to see them as desperate as we've seen. The thing for me to watch tonight, can the Pats play with pace? And can they do what the other two teams have done to get Swift Current out of that such tight formation? And Swift Current, when I asked Emmanuel Viveros today what's number one, he feels like his team has not managed the puck very well. And listen, they were miserable in the Western League playoffs in all the games I saw them in with my own two eyes, which was five, to generate anything. They've given up more odd man scenarios in one game in this tournament than I saw them maybe in the five games I'd watched them play this spring combined. If they can get back to that, they'll be an absolute handful.
Peter, I know you've got to get over to a pre-show meeting with Access, Western Hockey League and Access. If you're not coming tonight, you can check out that yourself. Kelly Rempel, Darren DuPont, I don't know who else you've got tonight.
You know who we have tonight?
Who?
After the show? maybe the greatest Regina Pat of all time, Dale Durkach.
Wow. That's awesome. I got to see him last night. What a wonderful man.
Isn't he awesome?
He's the best. One of the best.
Thanks,
all right,
guys.
All right, we will take a break. We will come back, and we will set up the Pats and the Broncos for you. Game time here at the Brandt Center, 8 o'clock. Les Lazaruk, Al Dumba, and crew coming in at 7 for the pregame show. And then, of course, Phil Andrews with the play-by-play. I'll tell you what, if you are not ready for this hockey game tonight, if you're a Pats fan, if you're a Broncos fan, and you're not ready for this game tonight, then I don't know really if you're really a Pats fan or a Broncos fan, because this is going to be one of the highlight games, not only for these two franchises this season, but these two franchises, period. It is going to be a dandy here tonight. Of course, Swift Current fans, they want to do it again tomorrow night. As for the Pats, they want to say adios to Swift Current. We'll find out if they can do that when the night is over. We'll have more for you from the Credit Union Eventplex, the Brandt Celebration Zone. When we come back, you are listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Mitchell Blair back with you inside the Credit Union Eventplex, the Brandt Celebration Zone. This is where the party has been going on after the games. Sharkey joining me, Rich Sutter also joining me this afternoon as they prepare for this game tonight, one of the biggest games in the history of the Brandt Center, one of the biggest games in the history of the Regina Pats, and hopefully they have a couple more up their sleeve before this 100th MasterCard Memorial Cup comes to an end. Guys, there is no doubt that Stuart Skinner has been the story for the Swift Current Broncos and maybe the story of this MasterCard Memorial Cup, even though his team is 0-2. His performance the other night against the Hamilton Bulldogs was one that could have gone down in Memorial Cup lore had the Broncos won that game. They didn't because of Marian Studenich's goal with 2 minutes to go in regulation. But as well as what Skinner's played, guys, I really like what Caden Fulcher, the Hamilton Bulldogs goaltender, has done. He hasn't faced the shots that Stuart Skinner has. We know what Stuart Skinner was all about, being a Western Hockey League audience that we are. Caden Fulcher, to me, has been rock solid for the Hamilton Bulldogs. He hasn't made a lot of mistakes. Maybe the only really crucial mistake he made was giving up a big rebound to Nick Henry with 32 seconds left in the opening game of this tournament. But I've really liked what Caden Fulcher has done for the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Well, you know, they've got a good goaltender, and that's part of how you get here. But Fulcher hasn't – he should have stole him that first game. He should have got him that first game. He didn't do that. Skinner has – it's the only reason Swift Current even has any life right now. If Skinner hadn't played the way he's played – Swift Current would, the bus would be warmed up. It'd be ready to go home. Like the guys, all their gear would be loaded. So, you want to talk about Fulcher being a big part of Hamilton. Without a doubt, he's a very good goaltender and he's helping him. But Swift Current would be going home already if it wasn't for Skinner.
But they're going to be going home if they don't win tonight either. And Stuart Skinner could have a game like he had against Hamilton and they could still go home tonight. So, and again, nothing against Stuart Skinner, but I just think that Caden Fulcher, maybe arguably, has been the best keeper here because he's been solid. He's made all the plays. He's made the stops when he's had to. And, yes, Stuart Skinner did stop 54 of 56 the other night, but they didn't win the game. But, Rich, it's not the shots that you save that matters. It's the ones that you score. And Swift Current's got to do that. They've got to find a way tonight to do it without likely, again, Tyler Steenbergen. And that just makes the job that much tougher for the Broncos.
It's also when you make those stops, too. It's the timing of the times in the game and, you know, if it's a power play by Regina, you know, you got to have to rely on your best penalty killer. Has got to be your goaltender. And tonight, that's where they're going to have to be with Stuart Skinner. I really see Regina tonight pushing the envelope. They know that the Broncos have played a lot of games this year, and they know kind of where they're at with this, and they know the desperation that they're going to probably and should get out of the Broncos. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to your own goaltending, too, in Max Paddock. I fully expect him to rebound again. And I think there was a little bit too much put on him after the second game, especially in the first two periods when he was pulled. But right now, you know, that's all aside. The biggest thing is now, you know, what's in front of us right now. I don't believe for a second the Pats or the Swift Current Broncos are worrying about you know, winning so much game or periods two and three. And let's get through the first period. Let's get a good start. Let's try and establish something. We know the building's going to be rocking. There's going to be a lot of Bronco fans in here. There's going to be a lot of Pats fans. And someone's going to want to seize momentum. And it's going to be a game of that. And it's going to come down to that. It's going to come down to what Peter alluded to earlier was forwards four through nine with the Pats. It's not so much about that group scoring, but it's about creating momentum. It's about creating puck possession. It's about pushing the Broncos and spending time in Swift Current Sand, because psychologically it's got to be wearing on that hockey club, knowing that, you know, do we got to rely on Stuart Skinner to stop how many pucks again tonight at the end of the night? And the Pats are going to be thinking, let's keep the puck at our own end as well and play as much as we can in Swift Current Sand.
Sharky, we talked about dictating the pace, and that's been a big key phrase here in this show tonight. When you see what the Pats did in the third period against Acadie Bathurst, and they were flying after they were down 7-2, and nobody thought they were going to make the game of it that they did. If the Pats come out with that same intensity and same spirit in the third period against a tired Swift Current team, it could be over for Swift Current quickly tonight. If Skinner has the problems that he had in the first round against the Pats.
I very much agree with you on that, and I very much agree with Rich, too, on the comments 4-9 through the Pats forwards, but also the Swift Current forwards. I mean, their last goal came from the defense, right? Their only goal in the last game came from the back end. Swift Current's forwards haven't done enough. If the Pats can take that play and push the Swift Current forwards back into their own zone, like we saw they did against the Teton, the Pats are going to be up big early in this game and have a chance.
Well, and a Heppo Niemi or a Godden, someone's got to really come alive here tonight for the Broncos with the loss of Steenbergen. That's a huge, huge hole that you just don't throw a youngster in or a fourth liner and expect them to produce tonight. I mean, we have a better chance to win the lottery if that's going to happen on Friday night. But bottom line, at the end of the day, you got to look to some of these guys up front, the older guys. You even got to add in a Malenstein or, you know, an Esteban who has got loads of experience and has had a real good playoff himself. But they're going to need some goals from maybe some other sources tonight to make this a real hockey and to push it to tomorrow night.
And you said it best when you talked about 4-9 again. If the Pats can cycle and force Swift Current to play in their own zone and not give Swift Current the opportunity to really get out and create some offensive opportunities, Swift Current's going to wear down very quickly playing behind their own blue line.
If you are the coaches of the Hamilton Bulldogs and the Acadie Bathurst Teton, who you know will be in the building tonight watching this game, and obviously if you're the Bulldog or you're the Teton, you're rooting for the Pats. If you're the Bulldogs, you're rooting for Swift Current. I'm guessing that probably they're maybe both hoping that Swift Current wins this game just for the fact that then the Pats and Swift Current would have to do this again, and especially against a Pats team that's well-rested, just to sort of empty that tank just a little bit more and sort of bring them a little bit closer to even ground with them.
I think they both want the home game in the championship. I don't think they're worried about whether there's a tiebreaker or not. I think they want that last change in the championship, and they don't want to have to worry about it. So they'll be cheering for the appropriate team together.
Or let's play till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, we want to do that.
A couple weeks ago in the American Hockey League, we can play till 2 in the morning, but nothing to be open by the time we got out of here tonight, you guys. So we'd be in trouble.
Guys, do you like these 8 o'clock start times?
We'd have to go back to the garage. That's what we have to
do. Do you like these 8 o'clock start times? Because we're used to 7 o'clock here.
I think they're terrible, and I'll tell you why. Number one, you know, it's a school night still, and if this is junior hockey, and you want to see kids at the games too. It's still junior hockey because it's kids playing. But also the time changes. You know, like you look at the game last night, it's 10 o'clock in Hamilton.
Yeah.
And if I'm wrong and someone tell me, it's 1 o'clock out east in Atlantic Canada.
It's late.
It's kind of disappointing after speaking, obviously, to the Sportsnet group guys as well, too. Like, it's disappointing for them as well because, you know, they're here. We're on a big stage in Canada this time of year for the Memorial Cup, and you want these kids in these games to be on the big stage at the right time.
And it's funny because we were wondering, is it because of the Stanley Cup playoffs that the schedule is dictated this way, or is it because of the Toronto Blue Jays? And obviously Sportsnet, their two main properties are the NHL and the Toronto Blue Jays. But as we have found out here over the past couple of days,
It's not the NHL that's deciding these games. It's obviously Sportsnet's deciding it, but it's because of the Toronto Blue Jays. And the Toronto Blue Jays are on a homestand right now. Those games are starting at 5 o'clock our time, 7 o'clock Eastern. So they want to go right from the Jays game right to the Memorial Cup. And I don't know, guys, like, they've got how many different channels?
Well, even the other night the game was delayed because the Jays game went long. Jays went long, and so the game was delayed before it even got started. So that, to me, I'm sitting at home waiting to watch it, and it was disappointing. The game wasn't on as it was delayed waiting for the Jays to finish up a very boring ball game.
We have just, well, it's the Blue Jays, but don't get me started on that. We have gotten the lineups now for tonight and for the Swift Current Broncos. Tyler Steenbergen will once again not be in the lineup for the Broncos. Of course, he was hurt in their game Saturday against Acadie Bathurst when he was hit by VL, their captain. There's been a lot of different as to what is wrong with Tyler Steenbergen. I've heard collarbone. I've heard concussion. But it doesn't matter if it's collarbone, concussion, or what it is. Tyler Steenbergen not in the lineup tonight, and that's advantage Regina Pats.
Big time. Like we said earlier, he had 12 points in the first round, and he was a big part of Swift Current's success in those seven games. And Richie said it best, you can't just throw somebody on that line and have the same chemistry and the same activity there. So somebody's got to jump into a role they're not used to playing and not used to playing with those guys and somehow create a whole bunch of success.
Just a reminder that we are here for an extra half hour. The show not wrapping up as it usually would at this time on a Mako Hockey Wednesday. We'll be here for another half an hour. And then Les Lazarek and the gang will have the pregame show for you, which leads into the play-by-play. You know, if I'm jacked for this one, I can't imagine what Phil Andrews is like right now as he's getting his final preparations ready for tonight's game. And I've been bugging Phil all week, asking him about, you know, the pace and making sure that his throat's good and getting the throat lozenges, drinking the tea or whatever. I get the feeling that young Mr. Andrews tonight could go right off the charts, and really, who can blame him? All right, we'll take a break. Much more from the Credit Union Eventplex. When we come back, you are listening to a Mako Hockey Wednesday in the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Mitchell Blair with you. Sharky Rich Sutter joining me on a Mako Hockey Wednesday. Les Lazarek has just entered the room. He'll be ready in about 25 minutes' time to bring you the pregame show as the Pats look to eliminate the Swift Current Broncos and turn a four-team Memorial Cup into a three-team Memorial Cup. But Manny Viveros and the Broncos have other ideas. They would like to do this, to quote Streetheart, one more time.
Oh, nice music reference, Scruff.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharky. You remember them, don't you?
Oh, yeah,
of course you do.
I'm old enough.
You had a mullet back in those days, didn't you?
I had a great mullet, too. Let's not kid.
I've heard stories about that.
It was a good-looking mullet.
I've heard stories about that. Peter Labardius brought it up. A few people have brought it up. The Pats have had production from their first line. There's no doubt about that. Their second line has had a little bit, but their third line hasn't had a lot. And I know a lot of people have said, okay, that third period, yes, they got their game going, but they want to see a little bit more from guys like Matt Bradley, Libor Hájek, Jake Lecicin. In a short tournament, that stuff is magnified. You can go two or three games in the regular season without scoring, and it's not magnified as much as it is in a short tournament like this. But those guys have to also get their game going for the Pats to be successful, not just tonight, but in the remainder of this tournament.
Well, as much as scoring it is, and we talked about it earlier, it's about puck possession and ice time in the offensive zone. If they can give quality minutes to their team, beating the other team in their zone and manhandling them below their blue line, they're going to have success, and they're going to get chances from it accordingly. If they can't, if they're constantly going back getting the puck and coming out of the path zone, they're going to get defeated. They need to be able to manhandle Swift Current in their own zone, and that's going to be the key to that.
I don't need to think the Robbie Holmes of the world and the Jake Lecicins, those guys are kids. They work hard. They get a lot of pride. You know, they want to be difference makers in a night like this as well, too. So, so expect, you know, I expect a lot of that line tonight. If you didn't get it, I think you'd have to be disappointed, especially from the coaching staff, from the Pats themselves. But, you know, we keep harping about where we're at with this group tonight. But I expect nothing short of a real good game, you guys. I mean, you know, you can talk about all the games the Swift Current played this year, and it's game 102 or 103, whatever. They know what's on the line. They're playing to play tomorrow, and they know they have to win tonight. So they're going to look for anything that they can build on, anything that they can grab onto. And we talked earlier about maybe an early lead, or maybe they get a break early, and then the Pats don't score, or whatever happens, and they'll look for anything that can be a positive. Trust me, that can say, okay, there's our break. Now we go. You know what I mean?
Penalty kill, anything.
Like,
yeah.
Something good that they can make something out of it, and you'll look for that tonight.
Richie, do you think that maybe those younger guys on the third line and beyond were a little starstruck? New competition, somebody I haven't seen before, the bigger stage. Do you think maybe there was a little bit of looking around and getting off track a little bit?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just a matter of trying to get on track, you know, with the layoff more than anything. And let's face it, these guys, Robbie Holmes and Jake Decisions, are good hockey players. And there's nothing wrong with what they've done to a point, or that maybe they haven't produced like maybe we'd expect it, maybe someone else would expect. But at the end of the day, they're a good team. They're playing another good team tonight. You know what? It's leave it all out there tonight. Don't even think about tomorrow.
That's
what are
right.
we doing, especially in the first 20 minutes tonight?
Well, the Pats and the Broncos obviously didn't know much about the Bulldogs and the Teton coming in. They had seen video of them, but they had to have a couple of shifts with them on the ice to just sort of see what they were like, have that game speed. They don't have that problem tonight. These teams are so familiar with one another. We talk about that best of seven in the first round. Really, guys, it was a best of nine because they played their last two regular season games against one another. So tonight, and I sort of thought a little bit last night that Hamilton and Akadi Bathurst were sort of feeling each other out last night at the start of that game. I don't think we're going to see that tonight. I think we've seen that the first, you know, the games where teams aren't used to seeing one another. But I don't think we will see that tonight for obvious reasons. And I think as soon as the puck drops, it's going to be like a Western Hockey League game that we've seen, only with a lot more on the line, obviously.
I think no matter what, when the Regina Pats lost out to this team in the playoffs, don't need to think that they knew that once they saw the Memorial Cup schedule, that was their third game. They knew who they had the first two games. Don't need to think that there was a big circle around game three on tonight.
You know, we talked about this going into the first round of the playoffs. And Sharky, I think you were in with Roddy and I when we were talking about this, and it may have been Roddy, Duke, and I. When you take a look at the Swift Current Bronco roster and what the Pats have done the last couple of years, there are a lot of guys on that roster that were knocked out by the Regina Pats. You know, you look at the trade that Swift Current made with Lethbridge, and the Pats beat the Broncos, or the Hurricanes out last year. They beat Calgary last year with Mateo Gennaro and those guys in the first round. This Swift Current team, with those trades that were made with Calgary and Lethbridge, a lot of those guys were focused on beating the Regina Pats in the first round. They did that. Now, the Regina Pats, having felt what it was like to be beaten by those guys, they had 40 days off. I'm guessing tonight they would love, and John Paddock has said, you know what, the focus of the game for us is just being in the semifinal and everything, but you can't tell me that group of 16 to 20-year-old kids in there would love nothing more than to send the Swift Current Broncos home for the season tonight after what they did to them on April 2nd.
It's important that you mention that Paddock's not bringing it up, because that's not his focus, is knocking Swift Current out of this thing. He's got to keep his team focused and playing very, very well. But the kids will have it in the back of their mind. This is a chance for them to get some redemption. This is a chance for them to show Swift Current that, oh, you might have beat us in seven, but we're getting you number eight. And we're getting our redemption here tonight.
Max Paddock. He didn't play well. He's 17 years old. He had a rough game against Akadi Bathurst. We know that. The confidence is there. John Paddock is giving him the start tonight. I don't think there should be a problem with Max Paddock, but if the Swift Current Broncos should get an early goal tonight, whether it be a good goal, whether it be a bad one, whatever, should there be some worry on John Paddock's part? Could we see a quick hook tonight? I don't think you will, but then again, in a game like this, I don't know.
They've had enough time between games to settle whatever emotions were down with, if there was ever any to begin with. The team we alluded to earlier was not great around him in that minute and a half in the game before he was yanked. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm sure he was telling me, you're the guy going back in against Swift Current. Let's just get you settled down, settled in, and get ready to go again. Reset the butt, you know, how you're going to be, and reset it all and get going. And you know what? Just go play. He's got the potential to have a real strong game. He's got the potential to be a heck of a goalie moving down the road. To me, it's about embracing the opportunity, embracing the time that you're in at this moment. Have some fun with it. And I think when they prepare him accordingly, he will play accordingly.
He's not hanging his hat on that last loss. No. They would have watched video of that. The coach would have identified more than him as responsible.
Well,
for that
and let's
first
remember,
seven.
John Paddock, as he rightly said after that game, they were better, everybody, from the goaltender on out. It wasn't just Max Paddock and Ryan Kubik.
Not at all.
Why the Pats were down 7-2 in the third period. It was everybody from player 1 to player 20 in that lineup. All right, we will take another break, and then we will wrap it up here. From the Credit Union Event Plex. Sharky, I just about said it
again.
The Brandt Celebration Zone, where it's filling up. A few people are going to have a couple of cold ones in here before they head into the Brandt Center for this hockey game tonight between the Pats and the Broncos face-off at 8 o'clock. You are listening to the Sports Cage of Mako Hockey Wednesday on 620 CKRM. It is time for the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker, and while there is a big hockey game going on at the Brandt Center tonight, there's also a big game going on in Tampa tonight, the Lightning and the Capitals, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. The winner moves on to the Stanley Cup Monday to take on the Vegas Golden Knights. They are in the first period. Alex Ovechkin has scored 62 seconds in. The Capitals have a 1-0 lead over Tampa Bay. Rule changes designed to improve player health and safety and eliminate illegal contact as a challengeable play will be in place when the Canadian Football League kicks off its regular season next month. The league's Board of Governors has now approved the changes, which were first proposed by the CFL's Rules Committee earlier this year. Amongst the changes are illegal contact and a receiver can no longer be a play coaches can challenge, and the so-called foreshore rule is eliminated. That's when a receiver catching a ball has to now place at least 1 foot inbounds, regardless of whether he was contacted in midair. And the Blue Jays are taking on the Angels tonight, and apparently Blue Jay fans have had enough. They have plastered the outfield wall with signs saying, "Bring up Vladdy." Of course, that's Vladimir Guerrero, and I think the Jays are taking it smart with him, but once they trade Josh Donaldson, which I think will happen very soon, we'll see what happens. The RMP Sportscape Sports Ticker for Regina Motor Products. Save up to 20% off MSRP on select vehicles and enter to win Metallica tickets during Mega Metal May at Regina Motor Products. Mitchell Blair, Sharky, Rich Sutter with you as we wrap things up. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes to go before we throw it to Les Lazarek, Al Dumba, and the crew, who will get you ready for this game, of course, leading up to the play-by-play with Phil Andrews at 8 o'clock. Sharky, it's been the story since day one, and now some more people are starting to talk about it, and Sean Semple has made some statements about it. The attendance here. It hasn't looked good on TV, but when you take a look at the attendance numbers, and remember, it is tickets sold, not butts in seats. 90% of the tickets have been sold here. There are people crying about the fact that it's too much. You can still come for single-game tickets. They had the packages. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's too high. I don't really buy that because it's the best hockey you're going to see. And if it was an NHL game, you'd probably be paying that. And people go, well, this isn't the NHL. Sharky, I really think this is just... really just people just complaining because they want to complain.
Well, they want to complain, but they also want to get in for free, and they want somebody to do something else for them. The fact of the matter is, a lot of sponsors have bought a large chunk of the tickets, and you can see the seats with the actual sponsor name on the seat. So whatever the institution or retail location is, they've got those tickets. They've bought them. They're part of their package. They haven't chosen to use them or distribute them. So it looks like there's people not sitting there. That's the choice of that sponsorship group to have not distributed those tickets.
$3.65 million for the host committee to get this event here. I don't know what it was like for the 99th Memorial Cup. I don't know what it was like for the cost for the 98th. But you knew for the 100th it was going to be a pretty price to pay. And the Pats ownership group was willing to pay that. And the Canadian Hockey League is the one that dictates the ticket prices, not the Regina Pats. It's not the Pats gouging you people, even though you want to blame the Pats. It's the Canadian Hockey League. $3.65 million for this event. I'm going to admit, Sharky, I think that's a little high.
That's a big number. The Pats are making their money on everything that's happening around the facility.
Yeah.
So, like, we got the band playing here. and the people are going to be rolling into this. That's part of the Pats operation. So, and the celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Memorial Cup. Again, if you're upset, go to the sponsor you see that's got a seat held and say, hey, can I get some tickets from the game? Because obviously you've got some because you're not putting anybody in them. Bottom line is those sponsors are probably rolling in for the weekend, the head office people. And, Richie, you know what it's like. There's always going to be a seat available somewhere. You just got to be willing to buy it and go sit in it.
Well, there are seats in like where I sit. I also sit as part of a group with the National Hockey League. And I know teams that were coming had to buy the packages, and that's fine. Teams did. What I would have liked to have seen was what teams had done in the past that hosted Memorial Cups let the NHL teams know that if you're not here the whole time, if you're leaving, like some teams I know for sure left today,
yeah.
So they're not here for the final 3-4 days, was the ability to turn your tickets in, either to turn them in, and it's not about being paid back for not using the tickets,
yeah. But
turn them in where maybe we could give them to people that, in the community like that could come and cheer on the game, Children's House, the Children's Hospital, the the Kids Sport Foundation,
exactly.
Stuff like that.
And I will
say, what I'd like to have seen. Whether or not that's happened, I don't think it's happened because I know that we weren't given the option in Columbus or other teams around the league. Hey, if you're not going to be here the whole time, do you want to give her tickets? I will give them to Kids Sport or something. Philistines.
And yeah. I will say this. If there is a complaint about the tickets that I have personally, and you just sort of brought it up, there was no, at least not as far as I know, and if there was, then I haven't seen it, but there wasn't a, if you're a child, you get in for so much with your packages, if you're an adult. It was just one price per package, and I think for kids, they should have lowered that somewhat because, yeah, you know what, it's tough for a 6-7-year-old kid. You want to bring them here. You want to be here, for him to see the Regina Pats and maybe win a game, but it's also hard to keep a kid in his seat for 2.5-3 hours.
Well, the other thing is, if you want to bring your kids down here, FanFest is open.
Right.
There's a ton of kids' activities.
But you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. There's constantly that talk about a kid's price on tickets. But in lots of facilities, the seat's a seat. You're buying the seat, not the age of the person attending the game.
And I guess that's the one thing is, no matter where you go nowadays, whether it's Rogers Place, whether it's the Bell MTS Center, Air Canada Center, I don't think anymore they've got tickets that are kids' tickets anymore.
No.
And that's unfortunate, but that's just sort of the way the business has gone. But you know what? There are people here from across Canada. They have bought their packages. They are staying here for a week. They aren't complaining. They're loving it. I talked to somebody from Hamilton the other day. They have had a blast here. They said they have gone to a couple of Memorial Cups when it's been in Ontario. This beats this, all the Ontario ones, all the heck. They said they would have loved to have had it in Hamilton because, of course, the Bulldogs were one of the teams that bid for the 100th Memorial Cup, didn't get it. But they said they're loving it, and I've seen fans here from across the country. They're not having any problems.
And to me, it's fun to see. You walk around the concourse during the games here, and you see fans from the Moncton Wildcats, fans from the Halifax Mooseheads, fans from the Everett Silvertips. Heck, there's been a lot of people who have walked through here with Silvertip jerseys on, and they're coming to embrace the experience of having this, and that's what it's all about. They're true hockey fans, they're sports fans, and to me, this is their Stanley Cup, right?
Because exactly.
This is what they
yep.
can afford to do.
That's right.
I mean, heaven forbid, you want to pay $10,000 for a ticket on StubHub for the final game of the Stanley Cup playoffs in Vegas, because that's what tickets are going for
they're
right
gonna
now.
Be,
in
they're
going to
be more than that when it all ramps up in Vegas.
Guys, we've got about 60 seconds. Very quickly, Sharky, what do you expect to see tonight? Are we here tomorrow for a game or not?
We're not here tomorrow for a game. I think the Pats are going to come out and play probably their best game of the tournament, maybe their best game of the playoff season, and put Swift Current away.
I expect a good hockey game. I want to see the best the Swift Current Broncos have got to give and the best from the Regina Pats as well. So I say flip the coin, let pieces lie where they may tonight, but it's going to be a good game. I want to see a good game. More than anything, a rambunctious crowd, lots of energy in the building.
There's going to be that for sure.
I want to see Rod Peterson be a very happy camper tomorrow. I want to see Luke Mullender be a very happy camper. Why? One, because the Pats will win, and two, because it will give them an extra half hour to talk about Rider training camp tomorrow. Because if there is a game tomorrow, Roddy and Luke will do the show from 4 till 5. We will be on from 5 to 5:50 to get you set up because the game tomorrow night starts at 6 o'clock. Don't get me started on that. We already discussed it. If there is no game, Roddy and Luke will be on from 4 to 5:30, and then we will have the show from 5:30 to 6:30 because, of course, if the Pats win tonight, there will be no tiebreaker game. The Broncos will be on their way home. The Pats will take on the Hamilton Bulldogs Friday night, and, of course, we will get you set up for that one on Friday during the Sports Cage as well. Sharky, thanks a lot for the time.
Thank you.
Rich, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You bet.
All right, I'm Mitchell Blair. Coming up next, Les Lazarek, Al Dumba, and the gang, they will get you set up. The Pats and the Swift Current Broncos. This is going to be a tremendous game tonight. Hopefully, if you're a Pats fan, you won't be seeing any more of the Swift Current Broncos until next season. But the Broncos, they'll have something to say about that. For our producer, Mark Harrison, I'm Mitchell Blair. Good night from the Credit Union Eventplex. You've been listening to a Mako Hockey Wednesday in the Sports Cage at 620 CKRM.